If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Life's better with American Family Insurance because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
If some guy comes over with that particular brand of arrogance and whatever, I look them directly in the eye, and I'm like, oh, mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, cool. Yeah, great. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh,
I love
this
that.
This is confusing.
Yeah, confusing. This woman seems strong.
Yeah.
Do not comprehend.
Yeah.
You're listening to Feminists Don't Wear Pink, the podcast based on the book Feminists Don't Wear Pink and Other Lies, a collection of writing by 52 women on what feminism means to them. I'm Scarlett Curtis. I'm a writer, activist, journalist, and very, very proud feminist. I'm also the curator of this book and the presenter of the podcast. During this series, I'm going to be talking to a few of the amazing contributors who've written our book to find out how they found their feminism and some of the lies that they've been told about what it means to be a woman. This week's guest is the amazing Alison Sudol. Alison is a hugely talented singer, songwriter, and actress, perhaps best known for playing Queenie in the Fantastic Beasts franchise. Her new EP Moon is out now, and it's incredible. She's kind, wise, and thoughtful, and when I first met her a few years ago, I was blown away by how vulnerable and strong she was. I'm excited to have her with me today, and I hope you enjoy our conversation.
Hello, Alison. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you as well, Skylar.
It is amazing that we made this work. Just to be totally honest with our podcast listeners, I went to the wrong place and was very late. And I'm also wearing a very stupid pink sparkly dress.
It's not stupid.
I know. It's actually the dress that I wore to the book launch, and I was going to pretend that I was like Miss Havisham and hadn't taken it off since the book launch.
I mean, if it's going to be any dress, it should be that one.
I know, I just wear this and I don't wash my hair and it's just pink, disgusting.
Yes.
No. I have washed it and I have washed my hair since the book launch. So my first question, which is how we begin all of our podcasts, mm-hmm. is, are you a feminist?
Yes, I am.
Amazing. I'm really hoping that one day someone's like, no.
No.
What are you on about? Absolutely hate women.
No. Goodness, that would be an interesting conversation.
Have you always been one?
I don't think I thought about it. I don't think that I thought to label myself as such. I mean, I always... It's kind of the same thing. In yoga class, how there's like the people at the front of the yoga class and they all seem like they know what they're doing. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
And they all seem like they're best friends.
Yes.
Like,
they,
when
yes.
did you meet?
Yes. And they are the real yoga
yeah.
practitioners. And even though I've been practicing yoga for like 18 years, I still think that they're like someone else is the more real than I
yeah.
am. And it's the same thing with a feminist. I think that it wasn't in the conversation. My mom didn't really talk to me about feminism.
Interesting.
And girls weren't that nice to me growing up.
Yeah.
I adored women growing up. I mean, I just thought that there were the older girls and they just walked on water and
yes,
and
yeah.
you know, and I've always loved and appreciated women. And I also had this very sort of hard-headed view that I was just as good as anybody else as a woman, you know, and like as I got older, there was sort of this like boys club thing that I ran into in the music industry, and I was so confused by the industry and a bit lost, and all kinds of stuff was going on in my life. And then I started to feel smaller and left out and almost infantilized by it. And so then I definitely didn't feel much like a feminist because I just felt, I don't know, I just felt like one of those women that feminists were irritated with.
Even though that's almost exactly the point where you needed feminism most.
Yeah.
I think there's definitely, I had a lot, I think sometimes for young women especially, it's almost like admitting you're a feminist is admitting you're coming from a weaker point of power.
Mm.
Because you to say that, you have to say women are in some ways disadvantaged. And I think that can almost be a hard thing for people to say. Because you're like, no, I can do anything the boys can do.
Yeah, it's frustrating that we have to have a name which also has all of these connotations, you know, of the past, of people having certain views around feminists, or that a feminist has to hate men, or you know, like a feminist is just a bra burner, or you know, and it's really so far from that. It's really about wanting to just be equal and to be treated with respect and paid equally, and you know, just like just like really basic things. But yeah, I feel like I still have a complicated relationship with it, despite the fact that I want to do more and more to empower women, to connect with women, to help erase the stigma that we have around our relationships with our bodies and mental health and around femininity and around feeling good about your body and all these things that, you know, they're just all these things that are seen as sort of weak or...
Completely. Do you think there was a moment when you started kind of embracing the word feminist?
When I started writing this article.
Really? Oh my God. That's so interesting. Because
I really hadn't thought about it. I mean, by that point, I had been basically like kept alive in a certain way by the women in my life.
Yeah.
There was a point in time where I had such a rough sequence of events, one thing after the other, and I didn't know how to continue particularly. And the women in my life showed up like I had never imagined anyone could, and it just like the love from these women just bolstered me up, and I felt this sense of like a tribe, like a real tribe, a real community that I hadn't ever really let myself need.
Yeah.
But it had always been there, but
you needed it. And then,
yeah. So I from that point on began to really realize just how extraordinary it is to be a woman and how necessary that sisterhood is. But yeah, I'd still felt funny about calling myself
That's a so interesting, because I think the reason I so wanted you to write something for the book and to read what you had to say is because we met a few years ago, and to me, you just seem like the epitome of someone that's so strong, but also so able to be vulnerable and kind of supportive and loving. And as you said, surrounded by these amazing women, and you just felt like almost like this amazing big sister, and that I could see how you know, sometimes you meet strong women but they don't seem vulnerable at all, and you're like, they're amazing but I could never be like them because I'm so soft and cry all the time, and like, and then I don't know, to me you felt like the epitome of both. But that's mad that you didn't properly think about it before. But I do think a lot of people have trouble embracing that word. It's almost like saying I'm beautiful, like I'm this. You have to have quite a lot of confidence to say, like, I'm a feminist.
Well, you are also the person that got me to call myself an activist as well. Because prior to that, I had a hard time with that one too. I was like, well, other people are activists and I just do things and,
do
you know.
So
But I guess it takes a certain amount of confidence and
also, I do want to help, as I said in my piece, sort of build bridges in this new wave of feminism that extend a hand out to men.
Yeah.
You know, I have been to, this is controversial, but whatever. I've been to, because I go to a lot of like feminist type of events and things like that. And I went to one and, you know, I got kind of upset, frankly, because I felt like I was left out of the equation for them. Like I being, you know, feminine and I guess cis femme.
Yeah.
And I have a partner who's a man and like I felt left out. I felt kind of guilty or strange or like I was an anomaly, and I didn't like that because I feel like fragmenting in this day and age is like a very dangerous thing for us to do, you know?
I completely agree. And I think all this stuff can be really necessary and really amazing, but it can also lead to us all being these tiny little groups of identities, which is great, but it can also, I think, lead to people feeling angry at each other and left out. And I think that is the way a lot of men feel. And, you know, I think there's a lot of different opinions on this, and some people think that's right, that they should feel left out. And it's like, their time has come. And, you know, even for us, like for cis women, like our time has come to feel excluded, which is true in some ways. But I think if we're looking at actually how do we progress this movement forward, if we're all feeling like we can't talk to each other, that is going to end up holding us back in some ways.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that there's a lot to be angry about. Mm. There's no doubt that there has been a tremendous amount of unfairness and violence and just a history that you can't, I don't know how you could begin to amend with the LGBTQI, you know, community. Like, there's so much. And with feminists and with women that have undergone continual persecution as women, you know, these are things that are that deserve anger, of course, you know, but then it's like how we use that anger to then propel us into change and to use it to somehow rise above it and be bigger and start to include and educate.
And like, educate men, especially. Educate, and young boys.
Yeah.
I completely agree.
Compassion, like really extend our compassion.
Yeah.
And that is hard when you're mad and like, and you have reason to be mad and, you know, it's tough. And sometimes I'll get into conversations where I start leaning a little too far. You know, I get a bit easygoing and I'm like, oh, I just wish that we could be, you know, like gentler in the conversation, and then the guy will say something, you know, that pushes me the wrong way. And I'm like, yeah, you have never been on a date with a guy that you don't know who is bigger than you, and suddenly you feel unsafe. Like immediately I start to go like, just wait, just wait 1 second. Because I know you're getting comfortable and you're like, gonna get, you know, like it's still, we have to come back around to that too. But yeah, no, yeah.
It's like we're a, really, it's like all women at the moment are like an angry toddler or something, and our mom's like trying to be nice to us, and we're like, you don't understand what's going on. Like whenever kind of men try to do something small, I'm like, well, you're saying that now, but you know, you didn't do that for years. And they're like, oh, come on.
But at the same time, you know, it is a really big eye-opening time for men, and like, let men learn. Like, it's okay to learn. If it's not, if we create a culture where it's not okay to make a mistake, where it's not okay to ask a question, where it's not okay to have an open dialogue where men can ask questions that they really aren't sure about, which may be provocative to us, but they like genuinely don't know. Like, if that is not a safe culture, then we are not going to move forward.
Yeah. Which, I completely agree.
Yeah.
And I think It's very interesting. I think it's easier. Like, I've had it a lot with my family members and with, like, my dad and my brother. And because I love them so much, it's very easy to be open and compassionate and explain things to them. And then I think sometimes I'm less like that with, you know, men I don't know or men that I don't have that relationship with. And it's almost like trying to think of everyone as your brothers or your dad and be like, yeah, they get things wrong, but we can explain.
Yeah, and think about, like, the way that people have been raised and, like, households that people have been raised in and things that were just, like, done in a certain way, you know, and, you know, that they're so inbuilt that you have to kind of be like, whoop, yeah. See that thing there that you just don't even think about? Like, let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that little bit of factoids that, you know.
Your career has spanned both the music industry and the film and TV industry, well, film and TV. Mm-hmm. Have you noticed big differences in the way that women are treated in those different industries?
Well, so the music industry was like the Wild West, and that's where I encountered funky stuff.
Yeah.
Stuff that's not so great. And I don't think that enough has been done to address the music industry at all. It's much less regulated than the film and TV industry, and think of, like, all the stuff that's going on there.
Yeah.
But my experience of that is, like, sort of 10 years old, and now I've started a record company with all women, so I don't have that problem at all. Yeah. But
also, you were much younger when you were getting into that. And
yeah, that was a prime age for getting all of the sleaze buckets and all the things. Yeah.
And I feel in music, almost even more than in film, it really is expected.
It's just, you know, it's just this, like, you're very vulnerable.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of time spent in close quarters with people and smaller, like, in a film set, you know, a director might be being skeevy and, like, might pull you aside or whatever. But, like, a lot of it is much more, like, you're with a lot of people. Yeah. It's harder to kind of have someone brought off. Obviously, like, in meetings and you know, that's when stuff gets quite shady, but at least in my experience, like, sets are much more regulated. But studios are not, and there are lots of meetings and parties and late night things, and it and you know, the music industry is hard to get into.
Yeah.
And it feels impossible until you're sort of, like, breaking through. Like, it, there are so many people trying to make it, and it's so hard to get people to work with you. And, you know, so, like, if you finally get someone to work with you, you're like, oh, thank goodness someone wants to work with you. And then, like, if they start acting inappropriately, you know, you, like, try to manage it. But it shouldn't happen the way that it happens, but it happens to so, it has happened to so many of my friends.
And would you talk, did you feel able to talk to people about it at the time when things like that were happening?
Sort of, but it was met with, like, there were two situations going on in tandem. One which was much, one was very, very gross and damaging. And, well, they were both damaging, but one was, like, a little less physically present than the other. And I didn't really know what to do about it.
Yeah.
I didn't. I thought I could handle it, and, like, I couldn't handle it very well. But I just, the constant sort of pressure and the remarks and just the way that I had to keep laughing.
Yeah.
I just kept laughing and going, okay, well, I'm sure your wife wouldn't like that. But anyway, so can we talk about the, you know, but it was, like, literally every conversation, you know, like a dodge. I became the artful dodger of sexually predatory remarks, you know.
So horrible.
Yeah.
And I'm so sorry you went through that. And I think again, that's something a lot of men don't realize is just, I'm sure it almost became second nature, like how to get around those things. And
yeah,
that's something that I think up until recently, women have never talked about with each other, is that like shared experience we have, but we don't talk about, of when people make inappropriate comments and you just try it. You know, I've been in so many things where you just giggle and you're like, oh, I'm sure that's not what he meant. And
yeah, because if that's what he meant, then this is going to be a really awkward situation. Yeah. And so let's just pretend you didn't just say that like that. And we're going to move forward. And
also you always, at least me, I always felt in some way my fault. Like,
of course.
You feel like you're, you know, well, I really want something from him. Yep. So no wonder he's doing that. Or, you know, even, I know it's a cliche, but like I was wearing this outfit or I was...
Yeah.
You know, and I think you're right, we are starting to talk about it now, and that's amazing, but I agree, we aren't. No one talks about it in music. I mean...
No.
It's
I don't know why. Although, to be honest, like, it's a kind of shrinking industry, and there are, like, still some big players who still have power, so I guess, like, you don't really want to mess with one of those. I don't know. I mean, like, I haven't named the people because there's, like, kids involved. And also because, like, one guy is just such a narcissist. I feel like he'd hear his voice, his name, and he'd, like, feel proud of himself. Like, you know. Yeah, I would say for young women, you know, young artists, like, I want you to know that you don't need to do anything that feels uncomfortable for you to make. Like, your music is enough, and trust that. And if somebody is putting you in the position where they're making you feel like you know, your music is enough, but you could, like, sweeten the deal or whatever crap, don't believe that that's the only way that it happens. There's a lot of good guys in the music industry that does not exist with. There's just some big creeps.
And there's a lot of people like you now who are changing that because you went through it. And now you're being able to, you know, be the person that you didn't have when you were getting in.
Yeah. I mean, I hope that I can help, you know, and, like, if you're somebody that is considering working with someone that I worked with early in my career and they cite me as a reference, you might want to write me up and I'll let you know if maybe that's a safe person. Because there are plenty of safe people. I worked with some absolutely extraordinary, beautiful men as well. Like, really beautiful, really safe, wonderful men. And that was very healing after that original experience. It was very good. And have not had any trouble since. I think I can sniff it out now.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you're young, you just don't know.
Yeah. And that is
what's normal.
Also, I think people would be more intimidated by you now, whereas...
Oh yeah,
They'll have read your essay in the book and they'll be like, I'm never messing with her. Yeah.
Well, it is funny when sometimes, like, at a party or something like that, you know, because I look a bit younger than I am, and then if some guy comes over with that particular brand of arrogance and whatever, and thinks that he can use his power or whatever, and it just, that, like, it's really funny to just watch that conversation
just
go down.
Whip out your magic wand.
I mean, I don't ever like to employ being, like, rude or sassy or anything. It's just more that I look them directly in the eye and I'm like, oh, cool, yeah, great, and they're like,
I love
this
that.
Is confusing.
Yeah, confusing. I am this woman seems strong.
Yeah,
do not comprehend.
Yeah, but don't, like, there's everybody has gone down roads, and, like, and, you know, needing something from someone, like you said earlier, that's also complicated. Yeah. You know.
So to pivot a little bit, a lot of, you know, a lot of what's been happening within the Me Too movement, just as an extension, has been people talking about, like, the roles for women in films. And one of the first roles you got was in Fantastic Beasts. And your character is so, strong and feminine and amazing and like such a kind of perfect embodiment of like everything I'd want to see in a female character in a kind of film like that. Was that part of why you wanted to do the part so much?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I think originally the role was written slightly differently, but the casting director, Fiona Weir, is just a remarkable woman. And she was describing her, Queenie, to me as this like incredibly empathetic, warm, loving woman who was, you know, sort of seen by others as a beauty, but had not a trace of vanity about it. And she's just like this big, open-hearted woman. And I thought, oh, she sounds amazing. And so I was playing her as an empath, and I didn't really know what to do about the bombshell type of thing that was at the side. And I was like, whoop, that's gonna have, I'm gonna need help with that. I don't know what to do about that. So I just like didn't even really try for that. I just focused on her warmth and her joy. And, you know, the director and producer, both Davids, they were like, you know, we really love what you're doing with her, and just keep at it, keep going. And there had been mentions earlier on the script of like people sort of treating her a little bit differently.
Yeah.
And those sort of throughout the drafts just sort of disappeared.
I love that.
And it was just a really lovely thing. I mean, I think, you know, in early drafts, characters are developing, and but it was really nice that I could be a part of that, and that that her heart does come first.
Yeah.
And I love playing her.
You play her. I just think she, I love that she kind of uses her femininity as well.
Yeah. She has no problem with it, which is something that I also took as a challenge, because me personally, I have all kinds of, because of what was going on in my, what was happening in my 20s, I got very buttoned up. I got very ashamed of my body.
Yeah.
I felt like my body was like somehow dangerous. Like I was like a menace to society or something. And so I really kept myself very buttoned up. I dressed very androgynously a lot, which I like anyway, you know. But I did, some of the way that I dressed was really just out of shame about my body. And then, you know, with her it was fun because I was like, well, we need more cleavage, like because they have to, we have to do something about it. So I was like, can I have some cutlets, and can we have a corset, and you know, like let's have fun with
that's
it,
so
like
fun.
Let's give her a shape that I don't have, and let's have her not think about it for 1 second. And
I love that.
It really, it was good for my soul.
I was going to ask you that, actually, because you, this is a podcast, so you can't see, but you're wearing a really amazing red turtleneck jumper with a fish on and no makeup. And you look amazing. But every time I see you, you're kind of in jeans and you're very low-key and in the way that you dress.
Mm-hmm.
Very stylish, but very... You never wear makeup when I see you anyway.
Yeah. I just came from therapy, so that was amazing, extra important to not wear too much makeup.
And then I see you on red carpets and you look like a kind of fairy princess, amazing person. Do you think you feel more comfortable now? Do you like that dressing up part of your job? Because it is a part of your job now, like to dress up.
Yes.
Do you enjoy it, or has it been hard to kind of get back into that after you said you kind of shut, buttoned everything off?
Well, the great gift in that was coming together with Leith Clark, my stylist, because Leith is a definite feminist. She is all the things. She is warm and sensitive and fierce and knows exactly what she's doing and cares and wants to know what's going on, and she cares about the environment, and she's just very passionate, and I feel safe with her, and I don't feel like she's dressing me to be some Hollywood doll that I'm not, you know. And I'm starting to ease into liking it more, you know, and like not feeling like I'm betraying some nerd part of myself by, like, you know, dressing in something wonderful. And I think there's also something nice, you know, like I'm being more open in general about who I am and what I go through. And and then I think it's nice for people to see me in that state as well, you know, like a bit more free, I guess.
Completely. I think it's really nice. And also, you know, successful and happy and to know that you can go through hard stuff but still have that part of you.
Like it's not all, I mean, sometimes it's lying in bed crying and you know, like a mess, and then sometimes it's pulling it together and going out on the red carpet and shaking people's hands and smiling, and like even if I'm nervous, like finding a calm place within myself and getting kind of still, and you know, and trying to be as present for those moments as I can.
I love that.
So
why, after I emailed you to ask you to write in the book and you realized you're a feminist, why did you choose to write what you wrote?
Well, as you know, I wrote like an entire article, and then I kind of rewrote it.
Like, they're both amazing.
Right, thank you. Right before your deadline. I just want to be real and level and not pretend that I'm not something other than what I am. And I also want to just, in everything that I do, like extend my arms open to bring people in. And I think pretending like I have all the answers, which was like, I had an earlier draft where I was like much more like acting like I knew what I was doing, and I was like, that's not gonna fly. Just suggesting things, but also, I mean, this book, at least as I understand it, is for young women to kind of like see different versions of feminism, right? And see themselves in these different stories. And I think it's most important that young women create a new feminism and
your own feminism.
And your own feminism, and don't be ashamed if it doesn't look what it looks like on your Instagram feed or something like that, you know, like tap into what's true for you. And mine is like a diplomatic feminism is the way that I want to go about it, just because I have so many incredible male friends, and I want those male friends to feel empowered to like be good examples for other men. And I want men who are good men in their hearts but stupid in their actions to be able to learn how to act better and not feel shamed. Like, that's, I don't know, that's where I was coming from anyway. But I didn't really know what I was doing when I wrote this. I just wrote whatever came to mind.
I think that's what's amazing about it, because I think with all of this, no one knows exactly what they're doing. You know, there isn't like a handbook. There isn't a plan that you should be following.
Yeah. This is the handbook of unhandbookness.
Yeah, the handbook of the messy handbook.
Yeah.
Okay, so my final question is, what is one lie you think you've been told about what it means to be a woman?
Oh, it's funny, because I've seen you ask that question to other women, and I never, ever answer it myself. Like, I've gotten conflicting stories about what it means to be a woman, so I can't really tell this without saying, like, sort of two things, which is, like, I've been told by Disney movies and stuff that you, as growing up, that, like, you're waiting for your prince to come rescue you, right? And then also, no, that's wrong, and you need to go it alone, and like don't wait for some prince, like be whole, and like you don't need somebody. And both of those things resulted in like a sort of stymied, you know, like they're just at a standstill. Where is happiness in the midst of that? And like, as a woman, I felt like I had to be strong like a man, and that if I were soft and feminine like I am naturally, that was somehow weak, and that was like the girl in the fairy tale waiting for the prince to come and save me. So I had to somehow be tougher than that. But that wasn't really the way that my strength actually works. So I, for very many years, didn't actually know how to be strong in my own skin. Mm. And like how there is a strength in a certain kind of receptiveness and softness.
Yeah.
And that there is a beauty in it. And it doesn't mean like abandoning yourself for something else or for some idea, or but it is okay. It is okay to need help. It is okay to be held. It is okay. Does not make you not strong.
And to help others, I think.
And to help others.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And in the same way of helping others, that you can be nurturing and soft. And you can also lose your temper if it happens. And you can, you know, but like, I guess the biggest lie really is that like being a woman is like either one thing or it's one, yeah. this one other thing. And if you don't fall in either, then you're in no man's land or yeah. woman's land. And it's like, actually, that is the space where you can be anything, and you can be a contradiction, and that's okay.
I love that so much. That's a perfect way to end. Thank you so much for being you and coming on our podcast and writing your amazing piece in the book.
Thank you so much for making me an activist and a feminist.
It's like a fairy story. It was in you all along. I just shone the light. Okay, bye.
Goodbye.
Thanks so much for listening to this podcast. If you've enjoyed it, or even if you didn't, we'd love to hear from you. So make sure you subscribe and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Feminists Don't Wear Pink and Other Lies, published by Penguin Random House, is available to buy now via the link in the description of this episode. All of the royalties from each book sold go to the amazing UN organisation Girl Up, who are supporting girls across the world. For more information and to join our gang, please follow us on Instagram at feminists. Thank you so much to Audio Boom for helping us get it out there, and to the wonderful pink feminists who've joined us as guests.
Hello, Alison.
Oh,
oh my gosh.
What's that? It's an alarm.
It's an alarm.
Making sure you're awake.
Making sure we're starting. We can start. Hello, Alison. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you as well, Skylar.